The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey everyone, welcome to another live recording of Trump's Trials and Tribulations, New York Trial Dispatch Edition. Today is May 6th, 2024, and I'm Roger Parloff, a senior editor at Lawfare. I'm joined by courts correspondent and legal fellow Anna Bauer, managing editor Tyler McBrien, and editor-in-chief Benjamin Wittes. Anna, can you get us started by setting the scene? Which one of you was in the courtroom? Who was in overflow? And what was notable about the pretrial activities this morning?
Yeah, Roger, I was in the courtroom today, and then Tyler and Ben were stuck in the overflow line, which is first come, first serve, whereas the line that I was in, you know, you can show up at 8 o'clock and go right in because we have a reserved seat in the courtroom. Today seemed like, you know, we were coming off of last week where we had this major witness, Hope Hicks, who testified. It was kind of a really interesting day in court that day because we had, you know, some fiery exchanges that had been going on between Emil Bove and the witness before Hope Hicks, Keith Davidson. Then we had a little bit of a lull because there was a documents witness, Georgia Longstreet. Then we had Hope Hicks, who ended up, you know, breaking down, crying on the stand. So it was all very dramatic and the kinds of things that you expect in the trial of a former president. But coming into today, there was a sense that maybe things weren't going to be as climactic. There is a kind of pattern that the prosecution has been going with where it'll, you know, bring in some people who do a little bit more, you know, talking about documents, because this is a case about documents and about records. And so it'll be people who are coming in either as records custodians to get evidence into the record, or maybe it'll be people who will be speaking about, you know, things within the kind of internal business records of the Trump organization, that kind of thing. And there was a sense that after that big Hope Hicks testimony last week, that maybe today would be the day that we got some more documents, witnesses. And so things did seem a little bit just kind of business as usual. There wasn't much notable that was going on in the line other than, and Tyler and Ben can chime in on this if they'd like, Ben did decide to bring a lap desk of his own to kind of try to deal with the fact that it throughout the day, reporters who are typing up notes basically just have their laptops kind of pitched on their laps. And it's really uncomfortable. You're sitting in this courtroom that is just truly like, I'm going to have back pain probably for weeks because of the situation. So there wasn't much there, but I was in the courtroom. Trump was there. Boris Epstein, who was recently indicted in Arizona, was also there with Trump today as well. This is the first time I have seen Alina Haba there. She was the attorney who represented Trump in the civil fraud case. She's been a close Trump associate and someone who's represented him in various matters, not representing him in this particular case, but was there in a show of support, it seems. And then also Eric Trump was there as well, which was interesting because we got some testimony about Eric Trump today. So I think in there wasn't much to say other than it did seem like business as usual at court. But Tyler, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe the overflow line had some more interesting stuff going on.
It was a pretty subdued day, I would say. And I think we'll get into a bit about why, you know, accountants have that effect perhaps. But there was a high school group of students on a class trip in the line. Again, I felt a bit bad for them that they didn't get the exciting Hope Hicks Day. But hopefully they learned a thing or two about the law.
You're selling the high school students short. They showed up. It was a class trip to the Trump trial. By the way, hat tip to the inspired teacher who thought that what a New York high school class needed was to see the former president on trial. Brought them there. The whole class was there. The court security people, God bless them, made room for the entire class at the expense of some other people who were there for, you know, just as walk-ins. The whole class, I think, got in, and they got a lesson in accounting and, you know, how you run an accounting system for a large family business that is also kind of a crime family. I think it was a good educational experience for them, and not one of them seems to have fallen asleep or killed themselves out of boredom.
Well, Tyler, what about the actual when the judge came out? I understand we had another contempt ruling. Is that how we started?
We did, yes. And just to refresh people's memories on the timeline, this decision and order pertained to a motion raised by the people on April 25th, which raised an additional four allegations of violating the gag order. Two of them were posts that Trump had made about Michael Cohen. One of them was about David Pecker, and the fourth one was about the jury. And as a reminder, this motion was filed before the order and decision on the second contempt violations, which Justice Merchan found Trump in contempt for nine counts, resulting in a fine of $9,000. This time, he only held Trump in contempt of court for one of the violations, this one pertaining to the jury. I think this definitely fits with the hearing that we had on May 2nd. That's the count that the judge seems definitely most concerned about. The first two, Justice Merchan found that he couldn't find beyond a reasonable doubt that they were responses to political attacks, which are not covered in the gag order. The third one, pertaining to David Pecker, seemed to be positive. You know, Trump said Pecker is a nice guy. I can't remember the exact quote. But Merchan did note in his decision that even positive comments can hide sort of an ugly truth under it or some sort of latent threat. But still, he couldn't find beyond a reasonable doubt that that was a violation. He did, however, find that the jury comments were in violation of the gag order. He was fined again $1,000. But Merchan had pretty strong words this time. He said these fines were not really serving the deterrent effect that they're meant to. And he issued another warning that essentially next time this could very well result in incarceration for Trump up to, I believe, the maximum is 30 days per violation.
That's pretty significant. Ben, after the contempt ruling, where did you resume today in terms of witnesses?
So we started with a gentleman named Jeff McConney, who looks like what I think looks roughly like what Donald Trump would look like if he didn't do a lot of work on himself, like hair coloring and spray tans and stuff. Got a giant mane of sheet white hair and a kind of white goatee, very striking looking guy. He was until last year the controller of the Trump Organization. So a lot of people found this testimony boring, and some of it was. I actually found the body of it riveting, because this is what McConney is describing is actually the crime, which is the scheme to get Michael Cohen reimbursed for the payment that he made by means of falsifying records within the Trump Organization. And the what he did was he walked through their accounting procedures, much to, I think, the chagrin of the high school students, and then described how Alan Weisselberg had come to him and said, we need to get Michael Cohen some money, added up the money in this kind of napkin, on the back of a napkin sort of calculation, divided it by 12 and came up with $35,000 a month, monthly payments. And then they disguised these monthly payments, which McConney sort of supervised the transmission of as payments for legal fees. There's a lot of detail, like hours and hours and hours of detail. And they had sort of the same conversation 12 times because there are 12 checks and each one has to be gotten into evidence independently. And so both with him and the witness who followed him, there is a lot of repetition, but the core of it is the crime itself, with one very important exception that McConney cannot give, which is the indication that Donald Trump himself directed this, because he got this in this order from Alan Weisselberg, the CFO. And so the defense on cross-examination was very careful to adduce from him that he actually has no idea why Alan Weisselberg wanted to do this, where it came from. So that's the substance of his testimony. It will be less prominent in the news than Hope Hicks's testimony. It is much more important to the government's actual case. Yes, it's 11 checks, 12 payments, or 12 iterations of $35,000 paid for in 12 installments, of which two are consolidated into a single $70,000 check.
Yeah, I'll just add one more point that they got out on cross as well, which is their theme that, you know, Trump was... that he has this vast business empire. He had just been elected president and had moved to Washington, D.C. in 2017. And so was very far away from this vast, Trump Organization empire that has like hundreds of millions of dollars that it's dealing with and thousands of partners across the country. And that it was a very chaotic time for the Trump Organization when these reimbursement payments started going out. Because Trump had just become president, that's been a key theme. And the cross-examination by Emil Bove, who I will say is very good at cross-examination, and it really, you can tell how much better at it he is than, and Todd Blanche has his own things that he is good at as an advocate. But, you know, it became very apparent when there was another witness that was being cross-examined by Todd Blanche, and seeing the difference there, it really showed just how good Emil Bove is, or Bove, excuse me, I think that we determined that it's Bove, how good he is at cross-examination. And those are a few of the points that he was able to get out with McConney, underscoring their theme of, you know, Trump was multitasking and he was doing so much and he'd just become president. He couldn't possibly be responsible for structuring these payments, even if he signed the checks.
Yeah, I'd also add that there was a distinction made pretty early on between the first 3 months, I believe, that were the funds came from the trust, the revocable trust, and then the remainder of the payments came from Trump's personal account.
You should explain what the trust is, because this distinction, I think, is actually, it's quite confusing in the charging documents, and it turns out to be really important.
Right. Well, as far as I know, that the Trump trust ultimately rolls up still to Trump himself. But the distinction that was being made in terms of how the checks were being processed were that in the Trump Trust, when the funds come from there, they needed two signatories, and a number of people were authorized to sign off on those checks, including Alan Weisselberg, Don Jr., and Eric Trump. Whereas from Trump's personal account, which McConnie called Trump's personal checkbook, essentially, Trump was the sole signatory with authorization to sign off on those checks. And those, the April through December payments of 2017 all came from Trump's personal account.
And the significance of this, importantly, is that because he's the only signature authority, any checks that involve, that he has, that come from this account, he has to sign personally. And so they would get FedEx to Washington. He would sign them, send them back before they could get sent. And that means that he has personally signed them. Whereas the trust, he could argue a little bit more credibly his name, you know, he might not have known that it was happening, but these are checks he personally signed.
And not to jump ahead too much, but we did learn in the next witness, the narrative we were sort of taken through because Trump, you know, in 2017 was in D.C. That's why they had to FedEx the checks to him to personally sign while he's at the White House. We did get the narrative up to them, you know, being sent, being FedExed there. And then there's a big question mark, essentially. And then we got the narrative back when they returned. But the next witness, who was the accounts payable supervisor, did testify that, you know, she doesn't know what happened when they got to D.C. She assumed that Trump signed them because his big, you know, fat Sharpie signature was all over them. But, you know, she couldn't testify to that, what exactly happened in D.C.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
So you mentioned that McConnie was a former official at the Trump Organization. He was actually one of the officials that Judge Engoron in February tried to ban permanently from serving in any financial control position. I think that's been suspended for the moment on appeal. I assume the jury hears nothing about that. Is that right?
Correct. Okay. The jury hears nothing about that. And he comes off actually as a very charming and credible witness. He does not seem like a, you know, like he was voted in his high school class, mostly likely to be forbidden by a federal judge from holding a position of honor and trust in a corporation in the state of New York. He was an extremely useful witness for the prosecution, and the defense did not really lay a glove on him in cross, although they did adduce these other sort of more favorable spins on his testimony. They did not try to savage him at all. And so it was, you would not know that he was one of the bad guys from this testimony.
Yeah, so he also endeared himself to the press by using the tried and true method, which is to, you know, make a joke at Cohen's expense. So, I mean, it was honestly, this was probably the least amount of laughter I've heard from the overflow room, the entire trial so far. But the few times there was laughter was when I can't remember if it was on direct or cross when they asked, you know, are you familiar with Michael Cohen? Yes. You know, what was his job? And he said kind of in a deadpan, he said he was a lawyer.
Yeah, And then later on Cross, he, Emile Bovee says, or Bovee says, so you testified that Michael Cohen's a lawyer, right? And he goes, okay, sure.
Sure.
There was one thing I wanted to ask about. I read in Tyler's Twitter thread. He mentioned he was the one who fills out the federal form, the conflict of interest form for Trump in like 2018. And at that point does say that Trump fully reimbursed expenses that he owed to Cohen. Is that right? And is that?
Yes, exactly. And so there's, I think there's a complicated, partly because, you know, these people aren't that clever, and actually being consistent in a conspiracy requires a certain cleverness. So I think what happened was at different times, it was useful to them for this either to be a reimbursement or not to be a reimbursement. And they just said different things at different times. So in this financial disclosure, I wouldn't say they're candid about it, but they are somewhat frank about what they did. But in the underlying records, the business records, it's, you know, it is quite hidden what the purpose of these payments are. And of course, one of the other defense arguments is that, you know, Cohen really was a lawyer doing personal legal work, which is why, of course, Bovee wants to get him to say he was a lawyer doing legal work, right? Which is what gives rise to that quip. But he does, you know, they're not actually consistent about it. And that gives rise to, I think, some capacity for the defense to say, no, we weren't hiding anything. Yeah, we falsified these business records, but we didn't falsify these business records, right? And so, you know, clearly you don't have a criminal state of mind.
Well, yeah, and I think, too, that there's this idea where they're, you know, because Trump, this isn't an evidence yet, but I would assume that at some point the people will introduce this Truth Social statement that Trump made at one point. I believe it was in 2018, or a tweet in which he did say, you know, Michael Cohen was reimbursed for a private settlement. And so there are a lot of inconsistencies, right, Ben? And defense counsel is interesting because I noticed that Bovee a few times even referred to in his cross-examination to the payment as a reimbursement. I think, though, what they're trying to say is just like, you know, there's nothing inherently deceitful about, even if it's a reimbursement or something, or a combination of a reimbursement and a real payment for legal services, that, you know, anything that was paid out to a lawyer in the Trump Organization books was coded as legal expenses. Is that the argument?
That's the argument varies. And I actually think they're going to get themselves in trouble with smart jurors over this. At opening statements, Blanche's argument was he was the president's personal lawyer. There was a retainer. It may not have been a written retainer, but he was made given payments subject to, you know, as a lawyer. And it, you know, he basically said it wasn't a reimbursement. Now there's some documents where they say it really was a reimbursement. And by the way, Trump has been, you know, has occasionally said it's a reimbursement. And so now they're kind of saying, well, all right, even if it was a reimbursement, if it's a payment to a lawyer, then it's for legal fees. And I kind of think if you're a juror, you're at some point, you're going to kind of scratch your head and say, wait a minute, isn't the simplest explanation here that the prosecution's theory of the case is right?
Yeah, so there's also a different element to it all, too, that it goes to, you know, intent and Trump's knowledge of the scheme, in which it seems to be that they're hinting that even if this was a reimbursement, he didn't know about the actual details of the reimbursement until later, and that it was, you know, Weisselberg, McConney, like the people who were working at the Trump Organization, who just kind of figured it out, and Trump just, you know, wasn't really paying attention to it. Is that the other kind of form of this argument too, Ben?
again, they're kind of all over the place, right? If Trump's signature is on the check, he was probably distracted because, you know, he was busy, you know, firing Jim Comey and flirting with Kim Jong-un. And, you know, that's, you know, it's hard to keep track of your checks when you're just, so you just sign things. But I think they're like, I think it's kind of a spaghetti at the wall defense, right? Maybe some people buy that. Some people buy that Trump wasn't a real, that it wasn't a reimbursement. And some people, you know, believe that it was a reimbursement, but they just coded them as legal fees. I don't know. I don't think we will know until there's a closing argument. But I do think they're making a lot of arguments that aren't necessarily consistent with one another.
Anna, what can you tell us about this next? The next witness you've Tyler was foreshadowing the payroll witness.
Yeah, we got Deb Tarasoff, who was the accounts payable, still is the accounts payable supervisor at the Trump Organization. She's worked there for 24 years, I believe she said. She was a very grandmotherly looking woman, wore, you know, these like thick glasses, you know, had a cardigan on, had a what was that accent? Was it a New York accent or was it like?
Sounds to me, yeah.
And yeah.
That's a New York Jewish accent right there.
Okay, well, she had an accent. You know, she has been working for the Trump Organization for years and years and years. And it was very similar to McConney in that it was a lot of, you know, here is how we do things. I will get an invoice and then I will cut a check and then the check will go back out to be signed by whoever has the authority to sign it. And then it'll come back to me and then I'll pay the, whatever the invoice was for. So there was a lot of just very detailed kind of technical aspects of the process for paying out invoices within the Trump Organization, how it's input into what's called the general ledger, which, you know, kind of keeps track of everything that's being paid or received. And so there was a lot of that. And then we had the same thing that we did with McConney, which was basically going through all of these invoices and one by one, as one reporter who was sitting next to me put it, as this was going on for, you know, more than an hour, he looked at me and said, thank God they only spread the reimbursements out over a year instead of, you know, 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a lot of that. And I'll leave it to Ben and Tyler to talk a little bit more about, you know, the cross-examination. I think there were some similar themes in which the defense counsel was trying to get at this idea that, you know, neither of these people, McConney nor Tarasoff, had anything to say about Trump's direct involvement in coming up with the scheme. The missing link seems to be that it's Alan Weisselberg, the former CFO, who, you know, maybe would have had some kind of knowledge of Trump's direct involvement, or it's Michael Cohen, who we're going to probably hear from later, and there's going to be more on that. We know there's going to be more on that because the prosecution in its statement of facts makes claims like, shortly after the election, the defendant, you know, instructed Weisselberg or lawyer A or whatever to do this reimbursement. Then they confirmed it later in an Oval Office meeting when Trump was president. So we're going to hear more about that. The question is just from who? Is it just Cohen? It seems like probably Weisselberg may not testify, but that's kind of unclear. And then the other thing, too, that we got from both McConney and Tarasoff is the prosecution building some circumstantial evidence of Trump's involvement, in that they both testified to, you know, yes, Weisselberg usually would talk to Trump about these kinds of things before he made financial decisions. Yes, there were any kind of check that had over $10,000. That's the kind of thing that you'd have to go directly to Trump for this account to get his personal sign off on. So things where it's, you know, they're testifying to what Trump's usual behaviors were with these kinds of transactions. And in that sense, I think the prosecution it was good to have these witnesses back to back, because it really kind of showed that both of these people who are very intimately acquainted with how Trump worked within the Trump organization are both saying, yeah, he usually would be involved in, you know, personally in this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I would echo that. And I think there was this sense that, you know, she was just there, you know, cutting the checks, sending it off to get signed. You know, she didn't have the authority to do any of this. But I also had the sense that they were using her to just teach basic accounting to the jurors. There was this great line she had when she was like, accounts receivable, you get the money in. Accounts payable, you give it out. So she was just kind of, you know, yeah, I think like guiding the jury along of just how accounting and finance works within the Trump organization.
Ben, we're almost out of time, but I want to know what's going to happen tomorrow. And we turn to you when we need 100% accurate predictions about the future.
Well, predictions are hard, as Niels Bohr said, particularly about the future. That said, I think we are. So the prosecution said today that they think they have about two more weeks of presentation. Remember, a week is 4 days in this court, and one day in one of the weeks is missing, or maybe 2 days in both of the weeks are missing. So you're talking about six more days of testimony, which means we're getting pretty close to Michael Cohen, because he's going to take a few days. And then, everybody except me thinks that Stormy Daniels is going to testify. The defense clearly thinks that Stormy Daniels is going to testify because they talked about it in their opening statements. I keep scratching my head and saying, if I were the prosecution, what do I need Stormy Daniels for? There's no dispute that he made the payment. I'm not sure you actually need her for anything. So I think we're probably going to get a little bit more back-end stuff about the Trump organization, maybe some more back-end stuff about the White House. You know, how do we know that Trump directed Michael Cohen to get this reimbursement and directed Alan Weisselberg to do it? And the answer is, well, one, because Michael Cohen says so. I continue to think that is not good enough given Michael Cohen's credibility problems as a witness. I think you need more than Michael Cohen. So I'm looking for who's the other witness who's going to testify that Trump directed both the original payment and the reimbursement scheme. And so I think you're going to hear some more testimony about these components, and then we're going to hear from Michael Cohen.
Well, we will leave it there. Anna Bauer, Tyler McBrien, and Benjamin Wittes, thank you for joining us today. And thank you all for watching. If you want to support Lawfare's coverage of the Trump trials and watch this Dispatch without ads next time, become a Lawfare material supporter at lawfaremedia.org/support. See you tomorrow.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.